Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, also author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis to start out the week for you, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good, and good comes, I guess, with quotation marks around it, because the fact that this guy's still walking the earth isn't that great. But the fact that, just based on a video with a masked guy who has a British accent, less than a week later, we already know who the guy was. This from Fox News. American and British intelligence officials are eyeing a British-born rapper as the militant who beheaded journalist James Foley. A senior Western intelligence official told Fox News that 23-year-old London rapper Abdel Majed Abdel Barry is the suspect, believed to be Foley's executioner. And it goes on in the story to point out that British intelligence officials have already conclusively identified who it is. They're just not saying who it is publicly yet. So it's a pretty good chance that this has been definitively announced. So within just a number of days, based on a voice and maybe his height, we figured this out. Very well done.
Yeah, very good detective work by the guys at MI5 and MI6. Apparently, Professor Henry Higgins was called in for a consult on this. Going for that. The key overlap of the Pygmalion audience of the Three Martini Lunch. What also kind of is useful about this is this sense that the radicalization amongst Muslim youth in European countries is kind of a topic you hear, you know, gets covered certainly in conservative media. National Review's done plenty of reports on this. It occasionally bubbles up, and you'll occasionally get glances at it, but there's this sense that nobody really wants to spend too much time looking at this problem. Sometimes you'll look at it after, you know, the riots in Paris a couple of years ago. But it's not an easy solution. The Europeans have not come up with a good way of assimilating their immigrants. Their welfare states are pretty generous. And so basically people sit around in these kind of separate segregated ghettos and listen to hateful imams and get their heads filled with radical hateful ideas. And before you know it, you've got your own homegrown terror movements. And hopefully, if this will kind of, you know, spur not just the Brits, but everybody else in the continent to kind of say, wait, whoa, what's going on in our own societies? And can we really afford to have this kind of separate, walled off underclass that is just marinating in this hatred and this you know, preaching of you know, pro-Al-Qaeda, pro-ISIS, pro-terrorist Islamist values? And hopefully somebody will start doing something about this, whether it's, you know, more tough police work or kind of a certain amount of, you know, outreach to these communities to say, no, you really can't do this. And in fact, if you want to be in Britain, if you want to be in France, if you want to be in Germany, you have to start embracing our values. You can't come here and be an Islamist, and you sure as heck can't do it on the public dole. So we will see if something comes out of this, but it does seem like the Brits are taking this very seriously, moving very quickly, and maybe this will be the wake-up call that the West has needed for a long time.
On to the bad martini now, and back to domestic politics. And Jim, we've been talking a lot this year about how the landscape looks good for Republicans potentially taking control of the Senate again. Of course, we had that same conversation in 2012, and many thought even in 2010, when they were looking at a pretty significant deficit, that it was possible, and things went pretty well in 2010. And 2012 was a disaster. We actually lost two seats, gave them back to the Democrats. And as you point out, after looking at a piece by Molly Ball in The Atlantic, right now the Democrats seem to be more motivated, at least in terms of the money and the ground game right now. When it comes to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, the Democrats have raised $121 million more than the GOP. The RNC is doing better than the DNC. But when you look at the House campaign and the Senate campaign, the Democrats have raised $27 million more than the House Republicans. And on the Senate side, it is $37 million. And you also highlight the situation in Arkansas, where they've got more money, more people on the ground, and they're just putting all in to make sure the Senate stays in Democratic hands. And the question is whether Republicans are willing to do what it takes to make sure things don't turn out the way Democrats want.
Yeah, you know, worth noting some very solid reporting by Molly Ball of The Atlantic, looking at a very under-the-radar get-out-the-vote effort that the Democrats are setting up. In particular case, she looks at a heavily African-American small city in Arkansas. We don't know if this will work. They may have a law of diminishing returns. There just may not be, you know, enough votes in Arkansas to save Mark Pryor, but that's looked like a pretty close race much of the year. The Republicans say that they're doing their own extensive get-out-the-vote efforts. The, you know, number of paid staffers seems like a little bit less. You could maybe the Republicans are hoarding all their resources towards these last couple months for a big late push. You know, could very well be the case. we don't know what's going to happen in November. But if it's disappointing for Republicans, this might be a big clear indicator that in the end, the Democrats take this, you know, basic blocking and tackling of politics more seriously than Republicans do. And that I remember hearing this back in 2012 and saying, you know, that the Obama campaign had so many more field offices in Ohio than the Romney campaign did. And kind of saying, well, does it really matter if you have this many versus that many, or, you know, how many more votes do you get out by having a field office in a particular community? Well, 2012 Ohio results kind of suggest that after the other, it does help. And so I put this up and a lot of people are saying, well, I'm really mad at the RNC for this. I'm really mad at the NRSC for that. And you know, for meddling in primaries. And okay, guys, like you're entitled to that opinion. But the end result of this is that the Democratic committees have more money and more resources. Will this make a difference? It remains to be seen. And if the attitude be, well, I'm donating more to the candidate. Okay, except in, you know, as you saw in Arkansas, Tom Cotton is still playing catch up. You know, maybe you contribute to that, these outside groups, Americans for Prosperity or these other groups that are out, you know, the various Koch-funded sinister organizations, things like that. And we'll see if that does much good. Obviously, they're not coordinating with the campaigns. We'll see how those organizations do in their get-out-the-vote operations. But again, I think to me, and from where I sit, a lot of these organizations spend a lot of money on TV ads that don't actually make that much of an impact. So, you know, at some point, like if I guess it's kind of this is my attempt to be Cassandra. This is my attempt to say to Republicans, look, the Democrats have shown they are in this to win this. Right? They will open up their pocketbooks and they will give whatever it takes in order to keep control. Maybe all that money is going to get flushed down the toilet. Maybe it's not going to do any good. But these are not really the numbers you'd expect to see in what everybody thinks is going to be a really rough year for Democrats. Now, maybe this money gets wasted. We'll see. But I'm sure every one of these committees and every one of these candidates on the Republican side would rather have a little more resources to build themselves a bit of a cushion than to hope that they're going to, you know, that the being outspent by their Democrat opponent won't be the decisive in the end.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and we head to the Cleveland suburbs. Has nothing to do with Johnny Football or LeBron James, but it actually does have.
I got to correct you. It's actually Johnny Backup. And remember, you can't call him Johnny Bench because that name's been taken.
Very good, very good. I believe the name of the town is Elyria. I'm from Michigan, but that's my best Ohio pronunciation. New federal nutritional guidelines for school cafeterias, it says has meant, means the end of a favorite and locally famous treat in one Northeast Ohio school district. The federal government's edict to provide healthier foods and cut fats and cholesterol put an end to the sale of the traditional Elyria pink cookie, a buttery sweet treat with pink icing. The pink cookie has been a favorite for four decades. The Elyria Chronicle-Telegram reports the treat gained a cult following through the years and was once named the best cafeteria cookie by Cleveland Magazine. Food Services Director Scott Tiemann said the recipe could have been changed to better meet nutritional standards, but it just wouldn't have been the same. So, Jim, of all the challenges going on in America, thankfully we've stamped out the pink cookie that the kids love so much.
I'm going to quote Jazz Shaw over at Hot Air because he makes a really good kind of – first of all, I mean, like, you know, ISIS is on the march. Russia's going into Ukraine. We have an unsecure border. Economy's not fixed. But, boy, we can really nail those pink cookies. like, the fact that they're pink makes them seem even more, you know, unmenacing and all that. Jazz points out, look, let's suppose you had a school and the only thing they had is in a lunchroom, he describes Hot Pockets and Pop Rocks. But let's assume some other terrible, you know, sinister, sugary food is the only thing they have on the menu. Well, then, then parents and teachers can step in and say, you know, we really need some more nutritious food here. But the idea that the federal government needs to step in and attack the pink cookies in this school outside Cleveland is kind of ridiculous and indicates just how far away the priorities are from, you know, what's actually on Americans' minds.
Jim, I think there's a war on pink food because you got the pink cookie. And remember the pink slime scandal from a year or two ago. So it's the war on female colored foods, I guess. I don't know.
It's the war on pink. Who's got a real war on women, right? War on women, right, Greg?
Right. Oh, happy start to the school year, kids.
Yeah. Anyway, on that happy note,
we'll have real news again tomorrow. Jim, have
Enjoy
a great day.
Your asparagus cookies, kids.
Jim Carity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.